Now we come in the Mishnah on Pei Bet Amud Aleph, the Abu Gurion. Ish Tzadjan Omer Mishum Abu Gurion. You want to say it, Moshe? What did he say? Lo ilamed adam et beno. The person should not teach his son. Tamo. That's a donkey driver. No, a gamal, a camel driver. No, a safan, what's that?
Someone, sailor.
The sailor. And the kadar, someone who sells pottery. So Rashi says on this, all these are called Bale Kranot.
Bale Kranot.
What does that mean? People who spend their time in junctions, corners of streets, of junctions, go from place to place and conduct their business. All of them are
thieves.
Occupations which lead a person to steal or to deceive. Why? Because these are travelers. They're all travelers. Go from place to place. That's the common factor. And the Kronos, that's what Rashi means. Keshelanim bedrachim, when they stay overnight, at night, also in different parts, but they stay then the day, and then at night, you know, they can find out what they can steal, maybe they can swindle. Hem nichnasim, v'luktim etzim min akramim v'apirot. By the way, when no one's looking, they go and steal, but they travel from place to place. So therefore, people won't even know who the thieves are. And they go and take wood, if they want wood, then sell it and use it from the vineyards, and they take fruit. So that's one aspect of the thieving. Vojnitskarim la'adam, also they're hired out to, they hire themselves out, different people, to make certain agreements. Umavirim al-tsra'am, but they don't keep to it. That a lot of these trades lead people to, since it's a traveling trade, they can more easily escape any form of supervision and punishment. So a person's got to make sure he should teach his son something more positive, and then he adds also chenvani. Yeah. So Rashi says chenvani is a little bit different because he is in one place. The shopkeeper can't so easily escape supervision or escape punishment. But what can he do? Chenvani. Melumat po'na'a. Until he is someone who can transgress the prohibition mentioned the Chumash, Lord Tonu Ishet Amito. You should not oppress or deceive one person another person. It says that twice in the Chumash, and one applies to Ona'at Dibur, and one applies to Ona'at Mamon. There are two ways in which any human beings oppress one another. One is by nasty speech and insults, which is a prohibition of the Torah, the Tonu. You always try to speak good things to other people and not insult them in any way. That's Ona'at Dibur. And then there's Ona'at Mamon. You shouldn't deceive them in monetary matters, either to overcharge them. If a person overcharges someone else, even in a small manner, if it's a fixed price, there's a prohibition of the Torah. If it's not a figure, if it's a more standard amount, then it's a question of six. And also, it refers to other forms of deceit in business life. So that applies to a storekeeper, also even people who deal in larger business. In fact, I want to discuss this So we'll not forget when the top mashgichim of the previous generation, when I learned in Yeshivat Chevron, I went and asked the mashgiach, the Meach of the Chodosh. So I said to him, I did know in Manchester there were some businessmen who were well known for their enormous honesty. And they always consulted the Shulchan Aruch. So why shouldn't know? If he's got a shop, he shouldn't pass it on to his children. I mean, for me, it would appear it's too open to risks to have a shop or to have a business. Could apply to other businesses as well. That's what umdus lekiyah bekala means, something where you won't have such challenges. And everybody knows, for example, in modern times, the Haredim have even become known in the business world, some of them, to be extremely honest on a very high level. In fact, probably the richest millionaires of the Haredim were a family, I learned from them in Yeshiva also, the Reichman family in Toronto. Their name, their name is Reichman, rich people. I mean, they were so great, such great Bali Chesed, unimaginable. Also in the time of the Holocaust, they already helped people enormously. The whole family, what they did for others, unbelievable. And they learned in Yeshivas. And even time, I learned Chavrusa with one too. You've met them? Met some of the Reichmans? I emphasized Yitzchok Reis for Reichman. I told them for more. In any case, they reached a high level and they were known in the world, the hundreds. When they became bankrupt, they insisted on bankruptcy law permits you, if you're bankrupt, okay, you have to pay back all the creditors. You work some form of partial payment. But I think they insisted they're going to pay back everybody, and I think they did it in the end. So they carried on the business, and they paid up all their debts. Then afterwards they began forgiving again. Because they followed the principle we discussed yesterday, that if you give, in fact I had a whole discussion in this matter, I must also tell you, for episodes which are quite important. The Moshe Feinstein has a teshuva, it's got a responsa, in which he says that a rich person should not give more than 1/5 of his income to charity. So I brought him a few sources where there seem to be opinions of some of the Rishonim who do say it's permissible if a person is very rich, he can give more. And I say, I myself know of people who give much more than 1/5, people who make good business, but they themselves, they live a modest life, but they give so much. In fact, there was a case in Manchester, I'll tell you this, a unique case, where the tax authorities could not believe there was a person who was lived in very modest premises, and they found out that he'd given so much to charity that it can't be correct. They brought all his records to the judges, and then the judge said, well, he's never met any person who's given so much to charity. And he always kept records of everything in such a good manner. So I asked him, Moshe Feinstein, what do you mean? There are people who I know. So he claimed, Moshe Feinstein, in his experience, all the people who give more, it's not really they give more from their actual income. It's just they instead of giving to the government in America, you do that. Instead of giving to the government, what they would have to give the government, it wouldn't be charity. So most of their charity is tax exempt. So really, what they're doing, if they do give much more than 1/5, they give it sometimes 10 times, 20 times as much as they're earning, but it doesn't come from their pocket. It comes, instead of giving it to taxes, they give it to charity. When I asked this mashgiach, he said, well, it's very rare that you find people. I said, but the people that learn the Choshen Mishpat thoroughly, Choshen Mishpat, if you learn it thoroughly, keep all the dinim of that section of Shulchan Aruch in the same way that you keep the first section, which has to do with religious law, and you keep all the social laws of the Torah, of the give and take in business world, also completely, then that way you can be honest. But I suppose this Mishnah speaks about the average situation. The Chenvoni. She said, Umnatan Umnatlistim. Whatever business or trades they have, these are trades of robbers. That's his opinion, in any case. And it applies in many instances. And Rashi says, Melumet v'ona'a, latil mayim b'yayin, zrut b'chitin. I mean, I'll give simple examples. He sells wine, but the wine is mixed with water. And he sells wheat, and the wheat is mixed with pebbles, according to weight. And today we have this as well. That people sometimes, unfortunately, have these things even with Tashmisha Kedusha. Let me tell you, there are cases where people today can make such exact copies of mezuzot and to fill in the parshiot that they look exactly as though they're written by a sofer, but they're not. They take the top quality parshiot from a sofer and then they make a photocopy in such a manner, which one can do today, they look like the original. I think you're learning his tefillin now, so it's well known.
Look at your basalt screen, it's more realistic.
Well, there you are, it's already there. And so, you have to make sure, just like for sure today, kashrus in food, you have to make sure even kashrus tefillin is correct. Okay. Any questions on this? Well, we'll see in a minute that Abu Gurun he limits that Nekir v'Kala should not include any of these. But Rabbi Huda, in the name of Bulguria, he just disagrees to some extent. They're not all as bad as one as the other. What does he disagree with? Let's see. Have you got any questions or you found any interesting explanations yourselves, please let me know. Anyway, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishmo. Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Abba Gurion, not like Abba Gurion. He said in his name, Achamarim, Ruban Rashaim. It's true, most of the donkey drivers, there are many wicked people amongst them, even wicked, but they really take advantage of people. The Gamalim, but the camel drivers, most of them, talking about the majority are kosher. What's the difference? What's the difference?
For Yerushalayim.
Huh? The Mishnah speaks
about. No, what's Rashi say? Chamarim u'misham evlistios, they rob. But they go from place to place and they rob the, well, it's night time they go and rob the surroundings. Nobody will know who did it. Or also, even as says, they also deceive the customers who ask them to please take something from one place to the other, and then afterwards they'll claim that, make all claims that something happened and it got destroyed. But how come? But the camel drivers are nearly all very kosher people. Why? Rashi says, she porshin, there are other explanations, but we'll follow Rashi, and she porshin le mitbarot. They, the camel drivers, have to cross the deserts. And therefore, they face a lot of dangers. There are a lot of wild beasts in the desert, and scorpions and other things. And there are also a lot of pirates and brigands in the desert to attack them. Therefore, they're afraid for their lives. It's well known, when a person is afraid for his life, then he becomes, generally speaking, more honest. Which they break their hearts to Hashem. I mean, one of the reasons, and you find this true in human history, some of you find it in more individual histories, when people have become affluent and everything goes smooth, and you're never faced with dangers, then often you lead to become corrupt, ben adam lechaviro, because you don't have any fear of Hashem. Yirat Shamayim, you're going to have some fear of higher authority that will not allow you to go and do wrong, even if nobody knows about it. If nobody knows about it, how will a person follow virtue instead of vice in situation of temptation? Temptation also to go and steal, to take things belong to others. The only way is if, to some extent, he believes in high authority. We know even something I don't believe in high authority that gives them moral rules. And that's the basis of Yirat Shamayim. That's what we call Yirat Shamayim. They fear the heavens. We say even if you look in the Tanakh, the word Yirat Shamayim is used in societies that didn't know about Hashem at all. When we went to Mitzrayim, he said, Rak in Yirat Hashem b'makom hazeh baraguni otva ishti. He wasn't even referring to the fact because nobody believed in Hashem in Egypt when Avraham went the first time. Nobody believed. They'd all left. They'd all become idolaters. But he means there's no fear of any higher authority underneath. They don't believe in a higher moral authority. It tells them when to kill and what not to kill. So that's it. But a person is faced with dangers, he naturally turns and says, there's somebody above who knows what I'm doing, and therefore I want him to protect me in times of danger. Why do I say this? Because that's one of the things we have to get through in our time, also to the Gnostic sections of Am Yisrael, which came out, let's say, in the last war. Tzuk Eitan, very much, when the head of the brigade, before the difficult battle they have to go into, he said to them, you know, you've got to have the name of Hashem in your mind. If you can't put on tefillin, not at least pray to Hashem. And they're naturally, everyone prays to Hashem when he's faced with death. And all those who criticize these people and say, how are you introducing religion into the army? Got to be an army like the other. They've never faced death. The person who faced death knows it so. I know it even from the statement made by an earlier prime minister, time of Yom Kippur War, called the mayor was prime minister, and when she spoke to English-speaking journalists, she quoted verses from the Tanakh, and she said, we have to pray to God, he should help us. So the Israeli members went up to, why do you say such a thing to the people in Israel, in Ivrit, they'll understand it. They said, no, if she'll do that, then everybody will think there's no hope left for us to be successful in the middle of this terrible war. The Yom Kippur was a terrible war. Almost 3,000 people killed us. So it's going to be an earthquake. She said, if I will say it in Hebrew, and for the last 40 years or 30 years, I've been the head of politics, and I never mentioned the word of Hashem in anything, they'll think we're in a hopeless situation. But she said, of course I believe in Hashem, you know. When you face, that's what Rashi says here, with the camel drivers, they're because of the dangers. Now, then he says furthermore, what's the next one? Hasapanim rum chasidim, not just kashedim. People who have to be sailors and go in the wild seas and survive the storms, they, even saints, it says, Shiposhim the Makoma Sakanda, but Tamidheim Bira Ada, Yotamina Gamalim. They go to such dangerous situations with their pirates and their storms and shipwrecks. So they are in trembling all the time. And as a result, they also become Hasidim. No, we've got to change our whole life. But it's a beautiful illustration that's given in the Mafti of Yom Kippur. What's the Maftiv Yom Kippur in the afternoon? What is it?
Yonah, yeah.
And Yonah went into a ship to escape from Hashem. I said, what can Yachol? He wanted not to fulfill his task. And this huge storm. And all the, there was this sage is saying, because I mentioned the symbol already, there were 70 people on that ship, each one representing a different nation, and they all worshipped their idols and said, all the idols, they prayed to them, save us from this terrible shipwreck. And then they found Yonah. And Yonah said, it's because of me. And then when they threw him out, the storm went away. No more storm. And they all decided to all become Keren Tzedek. So that's a symbol of what might happen in our time as well. The whole world has been described by many people as a spacecraft called Earth. And the spacecraft called Earth, it needs to be steered through stormy waters. Am Yisrael had to steer and to save the 70 nations from becoming shipwrecked in this spacecraft called Earth. And we're in the middle of that battle at the moment, as you know. And now we come to come next. You're making no statements and all this, but now comes along Rabbi Yehuda. He adds extra things that weren't mentioned by Abba Gurion before. What does he say? He said, Tov Shebarofim, look at him. Now, so how do you explain that? The best of doctors, they go to Gehinnom. Yeah?
Yesh Mefarshim, best of the physicians.
Yesh
Mefarshim, the best of the physicians. That means, because they rely on their own Chochmah, so they wouldn't pray so much and finally merit in this kind because they rely on their own.
Yes, so one explanation is, I'll develop it a bit more like you've said, there's one explanation is not here. It perhaps hinted at also in Rashi, since you mentioned this. I'll mention, let's see Rashi. Anyone got another explanation? What's mean? The best of the doctors are for Gehinnom.
Because they don't want to heal. They don't want to heal poor people.
Mm. It's because they think that
they want money. You mean?
They want money. Huh? Rashi says that.
Yes. Yes.
Nice. But also yeah. They're thinking that it's through them bringing the healing.
They're what?
It's through them themselves, and so the best doctors that they're healing the most people. That they think that they're greater. That they think that the healing is actually that they're the conduit of the healing. And so yes. It's actually coming from Hashem.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Any other explanation?
They kill people.
What?
They kill people.
Yes. Any other explanation?
And the other one is that they don't fall sick because they eat very healthy.
Yes.
They think that they don't need God because they can heal themselves.
Yes. So, yeah. Well, there's so let's see first Rashi, who mentioned at least one of your explanations. The first explanation is Eloi Are Menacholi Umachalo Machadriem Bein Meshabeli Barakom. It's because they have generally speaking, doctors are paid good wages, and they make good business, and therefore they're not afraid of illness. And as a result, they don't break their hearts to Hashem. And therefore, I suppose they don't sympathize really with the sick people. Although they see sickness around them, but they always think it won't come to me. And as a result, they become more godless because they only think of their own benefit. And if they're able to keep themselves healthy, therefore they're not afraid of sickness. And that's one explanation. Upamim shorek mifashot. And there's something worse. Sometimes they cause death. Why Gehinnom? Gehinnom means a person who in his lifetime is only concerned with his own body, his own health, and is sure of it. Everything's going well with my body. The doctors know how to do that. And therefore, they're not afraid of Gehinnom because their whole heart is not connected with Hashem because they're connected only material things. So this first pshat of Rashi is also brought, and as a result, sometimes also they kill people. That why they kill? Because they're careless. They're careless about others and they kill them. And by killing somebody, you get Gehinnom. You could get the punishment of the world to come will come upon you for having been the Mishmai, but you've caused others through your own negligence caused them to die. You don't care when people die. But the answer Yesh Biyadol Rapo Te'ani Ve'Ne Merapeh, and also because he doesn't bother to heal people who are poor because their only interest is to get their salary and have enough to become rich. No, that's one explanation. Another explanation I saw is the other way around. It's not the true pshat, but it's a very interesting one. Given by the earlier one, the first Belzer Rebbe said this. Tov Shebarofim Gehinnom says like this, that a person who doesn't very carefully doesn't want to operate frequently. He says, "I can't operate. I can't take anything which is a risk because I'm afraid of Gehenom." Said, "It's good that a doctor should feel that if he is negligent, doesn't do his duty properly, he'll fall into Gehenom." That's when this case was earlier, the first Bel Terov, when he was sick. So they offered different doctors should come. Said one doctor is not keen to come because he's afraid that if he makes a mistake, he'll be guilty. He'll really be the one who's guilty. It's well known that there are many cases where people, they get the best doctors, and then they ask the doctors, "Well, what do you say about his future? What's your prognosis?" And the doctor says, "Well, the prognosis will be successful, and if you do this operation, if you let me do the operation, then he'll live another few years." And then the person dies shortly afterwards. Then the family come and make a claim against the doctor, even a legal claim. "You promised us that you would live till so and so." That's why a wise doctor will not take such risk, will not give a prognosis. He'll say, maybe yes, maybe no. You shouldn't be blamed. But there's also another explanation. The Tov Shebroev L'Gehinon, a doctor, a surgeon especially, but also other doctors, they have to have a certain quality of not being good and kind. A doctor sometimes is very kind to the patient because he's too kind to him. And if the patient says, "This is painful, this is difficult," the doctor will say, "Well, don't do it." And the doctor has got to tell the patient clearly also that if he wants to become healed, he'll have to take an operation, he'll have to take bitter medicine. The doctor is too tough. Doctor's got a doctor, especially who is in charge of operations, then he's also got to have the quality a little bit of being cruel in order to be kind. But if he's too kind, not always the best. Another explanation. And of course, one of the main explanations, like you said, a doctor who thinks I'm very good and doesn't pray to Hashem, then he thinks that he can take the place of Hashem. And you find also most doctors, in fact, will tell a patient that, you could have an operation this way or that way. But ultimately, the doctor should say to the patient, "Ultimately, I'm not the one entirely responsible. I do my best." The question is, can a person say, because Tov Shebroev L'Gehinom, so therefore, I've learned medicine, but I'm going to give it up? A person who knows something about medicine, is able to save lives, is he allowed to back out from it? Halacha l'maaseh today. That's a question. So we have a person, Tov Shebroev L'Gehinom, he goes through all the explanations, and a person is a doctor, he's got to give it up. If he thinks he can't be up to the necessary standard, what the din in this? Now, first of all, it says in the book, from where do we learn that it's a mitzvah to heal? Is a mitzvah to heal? Person not well, is a mitzvah to heal him or not? And you can heal him. You've learned the art of healing him, whatever the sickness is. You've learned first aid, so therefore you can help a person in a dangerous situation to give him first aid. Or if you're a better doctor and he's in danger of life and you think you might be able to save him according to your profession, then can you say, "I don't want to do it. There's nobody else but you. I don't want to do it because it's a risk or because of all these others."
It's a crime.
Is he allowed to resist?
It's a crime. That's like you've got to save him. It's like a drowning man, you've got to save him.
What's the halakha?
You can't stand by. There are many
statesmen in Chazal. Yeah. But what is the ruling in halakha and what's the source?
He's obligated.
Huh?
He's obligated.
What source is there for the obligation?
Stand by your brother's brother. B'chaybahem.
B'chaybahem is what means that a person has got to save his life. Yes? But from where do you learn the person's got to save someone else's life? It doesn't. There's different ways of healing people from danger. You find a person sinking in a river, and you can swim and you can't. What do you have to do?
Yeah, you have to save it.
Where do you learn it from? From where do you learn it? What's the source? So look, it says in the Chumash, "Verapo yirape." Where does it say that? If a person is injured, A has injured B, then A's got to pay doctor's fee to B. And that learn for apoy rape, he has to pay for the refuah. And from here we learn, we can't just shoot the way for up. So you see, a doctor has got permission to go and heal people who've been injured. But then it says permission. But from where do you know it's an obligation, like you said? From where do you know it's an obligation to heal? Or to save people's lives? Because do you know Pasuk from the Chumash? It says, Lo tamor l'adam re'echa. You should not stand passively when your fellow man is in danger of losing his life. But that's what it means. Loss of blood means loss of life. So if you can swim and he can't swim, you've got to try and save him. Yeah. Or it's similarly, if you see that he's falling down and he's hurt himself, and you know how to apply first aid, you have to apply it. You're obligated. It's an obligation already. And it's like this, the Rambam learns it out from the Gemara, which says, if you see a stray animal, what do you have to do? There's nobody else around, the animal falls down. The animal falls under its burden, what do you have to do?
Lift it up.
You have to lift it up. You can't just say, none of my business. It is. It says, if it's a stray animal, it lost its way, you've got an obligation to give that stray animal back to its owner, if you can. So the Gemara says, Hashivat al Chayim is a mitzvah of the Torah. What's the first mitzvah Shatorah Nidreshet Bahen, we said this morning?
Kalvachomer.
So the Gemara says, if when the animal is in danger, has lost its way, you've got an obligation to give it back to its owner. So therefore, Hashavat Adam, a person in danger of losing his life, yeah, and you can save his life, Kal Vachomer. Much be done in Kal Vachomer. So, human beings more than animal. Yep. So therefore, certainly you've got to save, got to get a person who's in danger of losing his limb or his life. So you've got to get back his limb or his life if you can. If you've got the ability to do so. That's the source of the Rambam reading. So the obligation to be a doctor. Or if you know enough about it, then you've got to use it if people come to you. That's why when Rama became a doctor, professionally, when he went into it, he would accept any person who came to him. He says that he had to. Dr. Shivat Gufo. He had certain times when he could do it, he had set aside. He describes in his letters how he was so busy. But he felt it's his duty, so therefore, he had to save people's lives. So therefore, that's the source for. Even though Tov Shebarofim Lekehinon, but you have to take it over in the right way. And this can be, it's not necessarily a contradiction, what Rav Yehuda says. In other words, as long as you say it, a filah, recognize ultimate principle on Hashem, but it doesn't mean to say we can stop healing. And that's why the din is on Shabbos. If someone's in danger of life, then what should you do?
Do whatever you need to do to save the life.
And the best doctors have to be Mechal Shabbos in order to save the life. Is it in? You've got to take the best people. And that's why today you'll find there are so many organizations, especially by Haredim, to help people for whom lives have to be saved in different ways. So that's Tov Shemrihim. Now, Gosh Yeshebetabachim Shutvashel Amalek. Now, a tabach is a bit different to a shochet. Shochet is a person who actually slaughters the animal. Tabachim are butchers. So it says, even the most kosher of tabachim are partners with Amalek. Now, what's this supposed to mean?
There's also different pshatim on this.
Yeah.
Some say
explanation
of Rashi is a little bit difficult to understand because it says like, the fact that they often have to deal with non-kosher meat which causes peaks of big losses, financial losses, and finally gonna sell him, cause them to corrupt their deeds. But another explanation is simply that the cruel act of slaughtering permanently animals is like causing them to be as cruel as Amalek, who was the first nation who attacked Israel, the Sinai Chinam, and without any reason. And this is an explanation which is easy.
I'll tell you a good explanation according to reading Kosher Shel Tzabachim. He becomes a shorter Vamahole. Means, since a butcher has got to make a living, and let's say he works together with a shochet, he buys animals, and let's say a third of the animals become treifa. How can he make a living?
Sell it to the goy.
Huh?
Sell it to the goy.
Yeah, that's what it says here. It's good, it's kosher tabachim, it's not the simple meaning, like you said, the simple meaning, but it's quite a good explanation. A tabach who wants to keep kashrus is under constant temptation that he will not keep kashrus. And there have been instances in recent years as well where they found that butchers, they swindled, and as a result, whole communities had been buying treifa meat under the kosher label.
Yeah,
yeah, it happens. That's when it's a lot of supervision for that. Especially today, you know, here in Israel, there's been a whole movement to permit people to say they're kosher when they have no supervision.
Mm.
So it's also because it's not a simple situation when it turns out that quite a few, some is because the shechita wasn't kosher, and some is because they found treifas in the animal, so they've got to be shutef with non-Jews. And that is the best, easiest way. As you had in Chutz La'aretz, it was easier. And here you've got to work with the Arabs, not so simple. In Chutz La'aretz, so the butchers made a business. Let's say a butcher would buy in, butcher also handles something buying in animals. They would buy animals, give them to a sheikhet, and the sheikhet turns out that half of them are treifa. Yeah. So if he's got a partner who's from Amalek, he can be from Amalek, because the non-Jewish butchers, the Jewish butchers sometimes also, they're all the time surrounded with bloody cuts of meat and so on, even with the animals themselves, with the Jewish shechita. So they become very gross in their character and their speech. And I have to be somebody who, for a time, I was also on the best in supervising the shechita in the abattoir of Manchester. It was not too pleasant experience. There was a vast difference between the mashgichim and the shochtim and the non-Jewish butchers there. The non-Jewish butchers there, you know, they take on some of the characteristics of the oxen and the cows, you know, and blood surrounding them. But if he's got a shutter who can we give all the safe ones for and be paid quite well for it, so he can manage it. See? That's possible.
Is there?
But the Rashi says, let's see the Rashi. Rashi says, Rashi's got topship at Tabachim, Sveike Trevis Boris Liotta. There are many doubtful situations of treif and meat that come to his hand. And he wants to make a living, and he's concerned about losing money, and therefore he claims that they're kosher, when really they're treif. And that's a problem until today, and that's why we have to have good supervision for all kosher meat.
Do the consumers have any responsibility by demanding, you know, very cheap meat? You know, they're demanding cheap, you know, meat that, you know, price is similar to non-kosher meat. And people need to be educated and to understand that this is, you know, this is kosher meat, and it takes time and effort.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had a policy at home, you know, the meat that we bought, maybe we weren't having a lot of meat, but we're buying good quality meat, and we understood that it was at a higher price. And is there a responsibility of the consumers to understand that?
Well, some is they understand, some is they don't understand. It depends on each community. but it's a communal responsibility to see that there should be a possibility of kosher meat, which is available to not just to the richest, but also to the poorer section of the community. Now let me continue the next piece. Rabbi Noroi Oima Maniach Ani Kol Umnat Shebaolam. And who says, I'm leaving aside all the different trades that are available to my children. But I'm only teaching my son Torah. Why? Because the reward for it has in this world, and the capital reward remains for him for future life. So the question is, how can Rabbi Naroi contradict the statements made above that a person olam always has to treat his, give his son a training, alright, and he's got to choose an umat give a color. So does he disagree with him? And also they say there's a statement made in Pirkei Avot that Tov Torah and Derech Eretz, Kol Torah She'eini Bamalacha, says any Torah learning which does not also have by its side engaging in some concrete trade or professional occupation, so its end will be nullified and it will bring a person to sinfulness. Also for the same reason, for the money, and therefore he'll be led to become a swindler or a robber. Therefore he's got to teach his son also some form of occupation, which is key of a color. So, is it a contradiction or not? And if so, how do you resolve that contradiction? Can anyone see any explanation? Which is quite some importance. Yeah?
I think Perkiobus is getting at the fact is that, you could, let's say, study Torah your whole life, but just studying Torah is not enough. You actually have to go out and use the practices that you learn as you study Torah to really make it practical and give yourself the rewards. If you're sitting in the room all day just learning Torah, it's not going to do anything for the world. You have to go out and first you have to teach, but then you have to use the ethics that you learn, let's say.
Yes. Well, so look, I want to give you two basic interpretations of this on these lines. One is as follows. I already mentioned earlier here that there's another difference of opinion brought in the Gemara between Rabbi Shmuel and Shimon Yochai. Shimon Yochai was someone who believed Torato Umnato. The word Torato Umnato means the Umanut is the Torah, like the Noroi says. And then the Gemara concludes the difference of opinion between the two. But the Gemara says, many people tried to do like Rabbi Shimon Yochai and failed, and many people did like Rabbi Shmuel, which is together with Torah, you also have occupation, trade, with the key of the color, and they've been successful. That's the conclusion of the Gemara. Now, practically, what does it mean? Also, you find this in the Rambam. The Rambam, on the one hand, he crystallizes all contradictions, tries to crystallize them. I gave an example of the Shevet Levi, and the Rambam says, Shevet Levi is not a Shevet Levi, it means any person who wants to dedicate himself entirely to Torah may do so. So therefore, this is the what Rabbi Naroi meant. Rabbi Naroi meant like this. We agree to it that as far as most people are concerned, one has to follow the principle which Rabbi Meir says, the father has the obligation to teach his son an umnot. But if a person sees that his son has special characteristics and can dedicate himself to Torah, like it says in a number of places in Chazal, if a person who studied Torah for 5 years and was not successful, then he should make sure that he's got something else. But if a person has great success in Torah, he can go in the way of the Shevet Levi, and Hashem Yisbar will look after him. So therefore, he can be like Shimon Yochai. A person is permitted to go like Shimon Yochai if he's on a sufficiently high level. And Naroi saw his son is on that level. That's one explanation. So therefore, you can see I've got a son who I see the way he's getting into it, he's really involved in the learning. Fine, they make a great Talmud Chacham. And already people support him, Hashem will give him support in different ways, like in the tribe of Levi, that the Rambam says. But otherwise, the Rambam says a person has to have part of his time and effort must be given over to having a livelihood. Because if you don't have a livelihood, then you'll suffer. That's one explanation. Another explanation I saw, which fits in quite well with this, is that you'll find, and this has application today very much, it's what I tell many parents also sometimes, to appease them, and the boy wants to go on learning, the parents want to go to college or get a high degree or a profession. So I say like this, and it's quite valid. There are many aspects, especially which apply today more than earlier times, that as parents think, well, when you say, oh, someone's going to be a rabbi, you say, well, that's not a panosa for Yiddish younger man. Oh, he's just going to be a doctor or a lawyer. Then you make good business. But if it's just going to yeshiva, so what will he do? So the answer is today, yes, today even by going to yeshiva, you get a good profession. Because you become a teacher of Torah, become a rabbi of a shul. There's so many different vacancies available all over the world for people who've just studied Torah that they can get a high level. That's one thing. But there's also another aspect to all this. That when Rami says, Le'olam, so here Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda says, Rabbi Nori disagrees. Rabbi Nori says, why do I have to teach my son an umnot? I'll only teach him Torah when he's still with me. When he's, let's say, if he's an adolescent, I'll tell him, you go to school, only learn Torah, carry on like that. And the profession, if you're going to need it a bit later on, you can get yourself. Doesn't need me as a father to introduce you to business life, introduce you even to all these rather doubtful professions. If you go into business as a shopkeeper, you might go the wrong way. Learn Torah. Learn Torah for good few years, and afterwards, choose your profession. That applies especially today. For example, I'll tell you, people in Eretz Yisrael, many people, they educate their children. They learn a little bit of Limud Echol, but very little. They mainly learn Torah all the time, different parts of Torah. And then when they reach the age of getting married, and the Panasah, then they take a course, and in a short time, what took others, let's say the first almost 20 years of their life, to go into degrees from college and so on, in 1 year they can reach a higher level and earn more money. It's on the high tech. It's well known today that some of the biggest people in high tech, and even the people in the army, there's a special group in the army, the Avrichim who've learned Torah all their lives, and they like to take them. They make the best, because they need top people to work on the computers. They take the best people from the Avrichim, who send their, because the learning Torah is well known, even Korea they recognize it. Best way to develop your mind is through learning Torah for all subjects. That's why Nobel Prize winners, there's a large proportion, and most analysts have said it's because of the rich legacy of learning Gemara. So if those who've learned Gemara all their lives, they go and they can take a commuter course in a year or two, they outdo all the others. And that's the regular situation today. They know that. In fact, when there was the whole question how many people do you have to take to the army in adolescence, everybody agreed, even the leftists, you have to make sure that all the Elohim, all the geniuses in learning Torah, they have to keep on learning Torah, because this is the intellectual wealth of Medinat Yisrael. But we've got these Elohim who can reach a higher level. But now I'll tell you another pshat, which is even deeper. The Gemara says in Eruvin, Rabbi Meir, just to end with this for the moment, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Noroi, you'll answer me the question. They're the same person. Yeah? Rabbi Meir was given that name, Shemeir Eine Chachamim Balacha. Rabbi Meir was the one who brought light to the eyes of the wise in Halacha on the highest level. Yeah, he was that, Kadol HaTorah. But And Roy was his private name. He says, my son, I've got the rights to get my son to learn Torah. But for the general public, the mayor made a rule, Robo Kakolo, most public, you better make sure that your son, when he's young, has a basis in an Ognot. Otherwise, afterwards, he'll be led to robbing others in one way or another. So that's I think, from that Gemara would be the best interpretation.
Why?
Please, I'd like you to go on to the end. Tomorrow will be the last year. So please finish the mission, the Gemara, to the end, if you can.
The last pshat is contradictory. If Torah develops the mind, then why is there a risk?